Play fake. Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Oh, he got it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa! C.J. Beathard!
That seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? I am Hank Jones, and you're listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found lots of days at blogtalkradio.com. That would include Mondays, Vito Esposito show featuring Vito and Big Al, 6 p.m. Eastern time Monday, Mamma Mia No Sharia. And I'm in on Wednesdays, me, Hank Jones, Hank Jones Poly Sports, where politics and sports meet, collide, blow up, all of it. 6 p.m. Eastern time, except when noted. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. You got one more year to not have to watch Pac-12 football on Saturday nights. So I guess there have been some technical issues going on with Blog Talk Radio. It says they're aware of issues connecting to and running live broadcasts. Your engineers are hard working on a resolution, apparently. I don't know. I saw a message from Holzer, I think it was, to Vito saying, sorry, I wanted to hear your rant Monday, but guess we'll have to try later. But so I got several people listening. So I know Boyd the Alaskan is in the chat room. I have several listeners on the phone. So if you're hearing me, great. If you're not and you have my phone number, go ahead and message me telling me you're not hearing me. But in the meantime, let's ramble on, as Jimmy Page and Robert Plant said on the second Led Zeppelin album, appropriately named Led Zeppelin II. Then again, this is a group that called themselves the New Yardbirds when they first came around. Hey, to interact with the show, of course, you can go online, blogtalkradio.com, click the live button. When it takes you to the next screen, go down to the right, look at chatters, or maybe live, I don't know, and it'll tell you Global Patriot Radio, that's us. You can listen in. Or you can actually get an identity, log in, make your free account. It's free. Make yourself an account. Alaskan says no classical music. Well, not here. Some classical. I'm going to tell a joke about that in a second, though, because it reminded me of something. But anyway, get your own account. Come into the chat room. Alaskan is in here right now. Boyd is rocking it. He will be rocking it throughout the show because he usually does. Adds a lot of good, astute comments. Or you can call in. That number is 319-527-6706 or OT6 if you're a Navy man or a Navy woman. And he says he calls in to hear the show, and guess what? No classical music. Well, that's, I don't know. But in any case, he's hearing me because he's responding, so that's a good thing. So anyway, you can call in, 319-527-6706. Listen along. If you have something to say, hit the 1. If you're a first-time listener or you've never called in, you don't interact with me in any other way, I would prefer if you would go into the chat room and say, hey, Hank, I'm calling in. Here's my area code. I don't need the phone number. Just say area code. The reason for that is so that I don't get these sickos. I don't get people like Brother Warren, who evidently got banned from radio. And I don't care. I mean, he was a nice guy when he first called, and then he got rude with people. I've said before, I love giving my opinion, I love giving my insights, my observations, whatever. I like having people that help me do that, such as Hawkeye Mike, who's listening in, Vito, when he calls in, Indy, T-Bodie, Brother Tommy, whoever, Holzer, or anyone I've had on as a guest. I love that. But I'm not going to let somebody come on here and go crazy and tell me why Hamas is good or why Colin Kaepernick is a good quarterback or, you know, why Jim Harbaugh is, I mean, we'll get to that later. We'll get to the Michigan stuff. So anyway, those are ways to listen. Those are ways to interact. But again, if you're calling for the first time, give me a warning. or at least don't try to don't do this stump me thing, because we have a disconnect button. So anyway, I'm here in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with my mini Aussie, who has been fed. She was fed 5 minutes early today. Man, she can still jump like a maniac. My wife is working diligently over in acoustic Hank land. I am in electric Hank land / the observation outpost. Those that know me, I've been getting some good launch video and I'm paddling on certain nights, whether it be from Orlando or wherever. It's been good. Today's first internet laughy. Well, you know, the subject isn't funny, but it's apropos. The concept hits home, and it says it's from the Babylon Bee, and it says college student or Ivy League and other colleges offering attic space to Jewish students who are being harassed. I know that sounds ill, it sounds sick, but it's apropos in that, yeah, college students are being attacked on our campuses, not attacked physically, although some it's become close, but yeah, attic space. That's the joke, and it is a joke, and it is a funny, but it's not funny, you know what I mean? But it's typical. Actually, my big sister was listening online. Actually, we act like this is a new thing. I remember years ago when my nieces, her daughters, who were graduating from high school, back then there was stuff going on at University of Pennsylvania. I mean, back in the 90s, early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, where some guy yelled out at a bunch of students that were happened to be black, and he said, "Shut the F up, you water buffaloes, I'm trying to study." And I think he got kicked out of school, something like that. So let's get to the last week's losses that I deemed significant. Last week, actually on Halloween, we lost another American hero with the passing of NASA astronaut Ken Mattingly. He was 87. Commissioned in the U.S. Navy, I believe, 1960. He eventually flew jets. He became interested in aerospace flight after attending the launch of Gemini 3. He was stationed in Sanford, Florida at the time, and bopped his way over to Cape Kennedy, Cape Canaveral probably still at that point. He was originally scheduled to be on the near ill-fated Apollo 13 mission, as a matter of fact. But he was replaced by Jack Swigert, for those that don't remember. Hawkeye Mike, I'm sure, does. Ken Mattingly was exposed to German measles. He never contracted them, but he was exposed, and so they figured it wasn't safe. He eventually flew on Apollo 16, and he, as well as his commander on that mission, John Young, are two of 24 people that have gone to the moon. They are the only two astronauts who flew both Apollo and space shuttle missions. Ken Mattingly flew two of them. The second one included Allison Onizuka, who later perished aboard that terrible tragedy of Space Shuttle Challenger, January 28th, 1986. I will not ever forget that. Wednesday the 1st, we lost Peter White to melanoma at age 86. Among his appearances, he was on All My Children, also did tons of guest spots on numerous TV series. We also lost, I briefly mentioned it when it popped up, legendary basketball coach Bobby Knight at age 83. He is one of just three coaches to coach an NIT title, an NCAA title, and an Olympic gold medal. Only coach who had all those three plus a Pan America Games gold. He was legendary at Indiana. He won NCAA titles in 1976, 1981, 1987. His 1975 team was probably the best in the country as well, but they lost in the regional finals to Kentucky after their leading scorer, Scott May, was forced to play with a broken arm. It very, very much limited his effectiveness. It was the only game Indiana lost, by the way, between March of 1974 and December of 1976. He was both controversial for his antics and respected for his commitment to education. He made sure his athletes were good students, good citizens, and that they graduated. Only four of his players over the years failed to graduate. He got fired at Indiana, of course, went on to Texas Tech, returned them to the NCAA tournament after a decade-long drought. Here are some of his players or assistants or staff members that have become coaches themselves in college. Coach K, yeah, Mike Krzyzewski, Steve Alford, not going to, but he did have some reasonable success at New Mexico and UCLA. In fact, at Iowa, he won two Big Ten tournaments. Murray Bartow, Dan Dockich, Bob Donawald, Marty Simmons, Jim Cruz. Jimmy Cruz was on that 1976 team. Mike Woodson, Chris Beard in the NBA. There's Randy Whitman, also on that team. Keith Smart and Isaiah Thomas. Keith Smart hit the game winner in the 87 championship. Isaiah, the MVP in the 81 championship game. And then Lawrence Frank. Heck of a legacy, no doubt. Now, Thursday, we lost former UNC Tar Heel and NBA player Walter Davis, who's actually the uncle of Hubert Davis. At age 69, he played 15 seasons in the NBA. He was drafted by the Phoenix Suns with a number 5 pick in the 1977 draft. Also played for the Denver Nuggets and Portland Trailblazers. Friday, we saw a really weird, tragic death. Smith Station, Alabama Mayor Bubba Copeland. It's noted he was also a businessman and pastor. This is really weird. He pulled a gun and shot himself after a police pursuit that began as they were conducting a welfare check on Mr. Copeland. He was distraught about the outing of his cross-dressing and posts about sexual fantasies, some of which did not include his wife. Politicians on both sides of the aisle, Mr. Copeland himself was a Republican, but they have denounced the antics of the conservative website 1819 News, which they say was relentless in its attacks in pursuit of personal information about Bubba Copeland. Saturday, we lost French trade unionist and more notably famed watchmaker Charles Piaget at age 95. I believe it's a Piaget watch that Steve Martin's character uses to pay for the hotel room in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Sunday, we lost American martial artist, actor, and stuntman Pat E. Johnson at the age of 84. Among his film works were Enter the Dragon. He was also a stunt coordinator and the on-screen referee in the All-Valley Karate Tournament for 1984's The Karate Kid. Yeah, he's the referee in the finals, man, semifinals and finals. Monday, we lost former college football and baseball coach Carl Torbush after a battle with ALS, a.k.a. Lou Gehrig's disease, just 72. He coached at North Carolina, Louisiana Tech, and East Tennessee State. And yesterday, we lost funk rapper C. Knight to complications of a stroke at age 52. His most notable song was part of the group The Dove Shack, was called Summertime in the LBC. I assume that means like Long Beach Causeway or Long Beach Community. I don't know, but I used to be up on all that stuff, believe it or not. I've never been a rap fan, but I knew what a lot of that stuff meant for some reason. I know, that's kind of twisted, isn't it? That I would know that. So that's our losses for the week. If you would, please continue prayers for Felicia Goodson and family. I had mentioned it a week or two ago, but yeah, she let me know via Twitter, or via X, formerly known as Twitter, that she was diagnosed with cancer just over a year ago. She's a really sweet lady and still one of my favorite guests on this show. Privilege getting to talk with her and just message back and forth with her at times. So please add her to your prayers if you haven't already. Great, nice lady. As I said before, a former teammate of her son, Tyler Goodson, himself said, just a great family. As I said before, it's a FYI, I will not note folks killed in the Israel-Hamas war as long as media is going to continue to list members of Hamas as well as imaginary Palestinians. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center messaging and answering service for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, service company large and small, property management, surveys, kinds. Work with remote staff. And again, if your office didn't return to the office after COVID, you decided to just bag paying rent, which is not a dumb idea, you're a prime candidate for the kind of work they do. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or look them up on the web at alliancecommunications.com. And again, if you are a remote worker, they love working with remotes. So let's get to the stuff. First up today is an article that Hawkeye Mike sent me from DeRoy Murdoch of the Daily Caller. It's an opinion piece that uses actual facts. It's titled, Early Voting is Against the Law. It's really, really, really important that people take the start. Tuesday, November 5th, 2024 is barely a year away. How will it look? Not long ago, Election Day found hundreds of millions of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents with heads full of knowledge about candidates and causes. Beyond the infirm and the absent, Americans walked with dignity into their precincts at schools, firehouses, and libraries. And on one glorious autumn day, we decided, en masse, who would lead us in Congress and the White House. Today, the same crowd that cannot tell a man from a woman has demolished this beautiful picture, too. Election Day teeters on extinction. Americans now vote across election quarter. Elections start about Labor Day and end around Black Friday. Not good. But this need not be. And Americans who want to restore Election Day have a powerful weapon, the law. Federal elections are required to occur on, quote, the Tuesday next after the first Monday in November, unquote. This date is not based on something that Mark Twain whispered to Ulysses S. Grant. It is neither optional nor suggested. According to 2 U.S. Code Section 7, that Tuesday, quote, is established as the day for the election of representatives and delegates to the Congress, unquote. U.S. 3 Code, Section 3, Code 20 or 21, Election Day means the Tuesday after the Tuesday next after the first Monday in November for choosing the president and vice president, except as necessitated by force majeure events that are extraordinary and catastrophic. Those caveats were shoehorned in last Christmas amid the Yuletide spending orgy co-hosted by Senators Chuck Schumer and his loyal manservant, Mitch McConnell. So, absent total calamities, all of today's early voting nonsense violates not one, but two federal statutes. Early voting is against the law. GOP attorneys should be in every state, banging on the doors of federal judges and demanding they scrap every Democrat-inflicted temporary COVID-era early voting scam. Down with mass-mailed, no-excuse absentee ballots. No more drop boxes. Goodbye vote, ballot harvesting, and vote trafficking. Sayonara early voting. As many as 40 days before Election Day in Michigan and 46 days in Minnesota. Farewell late voting, with absentee ballots blowing into tabulation rooms like autumn leaves until damn near Thanksgiving. GOP employment of such methods must be necessary, temporary, and swiftly prohibited. Thanks to Public Interest Legal Foundation for filing a federal lawsuit in North Dakota to require that all ballots arrive for counting by the time the polls close on Election Day. It's bad enough that votes get stuffed into ballot boxes. They should not get stuffed into turkeys. America must reinvigorate Election Day, which is when citizens voted until Obama and company started to demolish this hallowed tradition, just as Democrats grind their rusty cleats into every neck they can find. Democrats will whine that restoring Election Day is a right-wing, mega-maga Republican plot to suppress black votes and steal elections. Yawn. When Democrats spew this lie, Republicans should remind them that such racists as Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, LBJ, JFK, and FDR all won the White House, and their Democrat comrades held Congress, while they followed the same Election Day rules that they would denounce as pure bigotry today. Conservative activists, donors, leaders, and groups should adopt this cause. Republicans should deploy battalions of attorneys to unleash this strategy to the GOP's advantage. A level playing field would cripple modern Democrats. I hereby volunteer to assist anyone who will litigate this vital matter. Specifically, I would be thrilled to be the lead plaintiff in relevant federal lawsuits. I would be honored to be the Clarence Earl Gideon, Ernesto Miranda, or Dick Anthony Heller on the lawsuit that finally obliterates the Democrats' election theft machine. If GOP lawsuits fail, they fail. But if Republicans win, they win. Big league. Republicans will know neither loss nor victory until they try. The GOP needs to fight this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. If not, Democrats will keep stealing elections until they achieve the one-party neo-Marxist dictatorship that they crave. Republicans have everything to win. What the hell do we have to lose? Make Election Day great again. Think about it. It really has come down to that. I mean, between primaries, where you can vote up to, in some cases, 30 days in advance in some places, in general elections, where we hear 45 days or 46 minutes. I mean, that's literally 2+ months, 2.5 to 3 months to vote. Era where public transfer, I mean, George Washington had to float alone to travel to his first inauguration, and he traveled like 3 days to get there. We're a little past that. Now, I think we've proven that using the internet and a lot of technology is not necessarily the solution, folks. But he says the number he calls it on his VoIP phone, voice over internet protocol, it's a pay feature. I know when I call to the host line that it is, but I don't do that, so except in extreme cases. But welcome, Duck, to the chat room in any case. No, this is really important. I mean, look, ballot stuffing and all that crap, the cheating has been going on for a long time. If you remember Karma Girl back in 2021 talking about it, maybe it was 2022, I think it was 2021, talking about it. And, you know, she was part of the Arizona audit. She pointed out that in the same county, you had 3 and 4 and 5 different types of ballot card stock. I mean, what the hell is that? So, yeah, we need, I mean, I've heard various solutions. There's a local guy in Orlando that used to say, make Election Day a holiday. The polls open 24 hours, midnight to midnight. Now, that's not always practical. One, you're mandating that businesses close, or you're mandating that people not earn a living. You're saying make it a mandatory federal holiday. Well, you know, there are people that conscientiously don't vote in our elections, don't believe in earthly leaders. Now, I'm not saying that's a good or a bad. That's their own personal choice. But I mean, saying mandating certain stuff, yeah. But having it available midnight to midnight, just saying that's, you know, if you can't do it on that date, so, you know, tough darts, you don't vote. Well, whatever. Again, there are always exceptions, but they don't have to be that many. And they can be tightened up. But just ballot on demand, that's crap. It's designed to cheat. Then we get this article in the Conservative Review from John Lucas. Good as the article is, get a puke bucket for this one. This is an age-old problem among many of our government types, and while there is truth to it, it is still, to a degree, repulsive, the concept. So the title, Biden Administration, War is good, is very good for business. Says, has a single member of the White House staff ever held a dying American soldier in his arms as he bled out, calling for his mother? Have any of them ever loaded the blood-soaked bodies of their wounded and killed into a medevac helicopter and then endured sleepless nights thinking about the visits their families are about to get and the ensuing destruction of their lives and dreams? These were the first questions that popped into my mind when I saw a report from Politico that the Biden administration is promoting the war in Ukraine because it is good for American business. Think the members of the administration could not have experienced these things because if they had, and if they had 1 ounce of humanity in them, they could not possibly have promoted war on the it's good for business rationale. Apparently, multiple White House aides have been involved in this abomination because Politico is quite specific. The White House has been quietly urging lawmakers in both parties to sell the war efforts abroad as a potential economic boom at home. Aides have been distributing talking points to Democrats and Republicans who have been supportive of continued efforts to fund Ukraine's resistance to make the case that doing so is good for American jobs, according to five White House aides and lawmakers familiar with the effort, and granted anonymity to speak freely. The Biden administration is fearful that it cannot sell its most recent aid package on the merits and on national security grounds because, quote, the talking points are an implicit recognition that the administration has work to do in selling its $106 billion foreign aid supplemental request, and that talking about it squarely under the umbrella of national security interests hasn't done the trick, unquote, Politico states. The reprehensibility of these comments cannot be overstated. Biden's administration is peopled with a number of elites who are probably are familiar, at least in a theoretical intellectual sense, with John Stuart Mill's dictum, war is an ugly thing. But hey, if it's good for business, particularly in electoral swing states, let's go for it. I'm old enough to remember how the left tarred George Bush, Dick Cheney, and others in the GOP with the argument that they wanted war because it was good for their supporters and big business. I never put any stock in these arguments because I thought no American could be so evil as to support war as a sop to big business. The Biden administration has changed my mind. My contempt and revulsion for these people knows no bounds. I agree very much, Mr. Lucas. It's true. I mean, they are literally selling. I mean, nobody, no sane person is pushing for continued aid to Ukraine. No sane person is. What happens in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine does not directly affect us. All for being supportive of Ukraine in certain respects as a sovereign nation. People are talking about Ukraine needs to be allowed into NATO. Meanwhile, NATO allies such as Turkey are calling Hamas war criminals heroes and calling Israel the war criminals. So yeah, NATO's starting to lose its allure, isn't it, folks? Look, I know we need to support Israel, and I know there are people that say, well, are we going to put boots on? You know what? American servicemen over there have been attacked. Those who are just over there, not in war posture. So we need to respond to those types of things. But we've faced no direct attacks as a result of Russia's attacks on encroachment into Ukraine. I mean, to see that they're saying it's very good for big business is absolutely – now, look, I'm not going to lie. World War II got us out of the Great Depression. Know that. But we also know that war was extended in Vietnam to satisfy who knows. Look, concept, I mean, this is a personal thing here. I'm not going to get into it because I've not served directly in the military. I've had family that has, brothers-in-law, my father served in the military. I mean, look, it's not a not coming from a stance of expertise or anything like that. But concept wars themselves are usually fraught with all kinds of problems. Look, the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on terrorism. Sorry. Yes, we had to respond after 9/11. But when we start calling it the war on terrorism or the war on terror, man, we have some real problems if that's how we're posturing ourselves. It's simple. Concept wars are usually destined coming a Vietnam type thing. What was our objective in Afghanistan? Theoretically, it was to get bin Laden and to wipe out the terror training camps. And we were going into Iraq for weapons of mass destruction. Well, my God, the media, we couldn't even portray it when we did find some. We couldn't even say that we had because of, I mean, that, you know, when we get into that, concept wars are usually a pretty damn losing battle. So we need to stop those. Let's move on. Poly Sports. Northwestern State, not Northwestern University, Northwestern State canceled their football season after the shooting death of a player, followed by the resignation of their coach. I might add that the family of the player has filed suit against the school and coach. I'm not sure that has any merit, which is probably why they will win millions. Their quarterback has lashed out. Lashes out at school for canceling season following death of the player. They failed us as athletes, Tyler VanderWaal said. He's right. He's absolutely right. So basically, Northwestern State quarterback Tyler VanderWaal spoke out against the university's decision to cancel the season after one of its players was shot and killed earlier this month. VanderWaal's a senior who made his debut as their starting quarterback in September, posted a lengthy statement on social media just one day after the university abruptly ended the season and announced that head coach Brad Laird had resigned. Both decisions followed the October 12th death of defensive back Ronnie Caldwell, who, by the way, was not actively playing. Northwestern State President Dr. Marcus Jones and Director of Athletics Kevin Bostian have failed the players immensely. Canceling of the season was never about Ronnie. They used his unfortunate passing as a cop-out. VanderWaal wrote, the lack of leadership was evident. As much as I respected Coach Laird as a coach and a man, he didn't have any control of his team. As players, we were kept in the dark about everything. The decision makers here thought it was a good idea to cancel the season and take away the only structure we had. They thought it would be smart to take away these players' outlets during a time of grief, where we go to be together and have fun and play the game we love, to cancel the season because we're not all mentally there and need more time to grieve, and then start off-season workouts on Monday. No, I fully believe there was more to this decision that we will never know. This was just an easy way to get out of things. They didn't consider the players in this decision, and they failed us as athletes. Athletic department responded to his criticisms in a statement to KALB and defended the decision to prioritize the health and welfare of everyone involved. We understand and respect the feelings of our players. They are fierce competitors, and no doubt some wanted to get back on the field of play. Today, we had to take the health and welfare of players and coaches into consideration when making this difficult decision. While not easy, we are confident we made the right call. There were four games remaining on the team's schedule when the university announced the decision to abruptly end the season, citing concern for, quote, the mental health and well-being of its student-athletes. Laird also announced his decision to step down amid his sixth season with the program. The Natchitoches Police Department in Louisiana responded to reports of gunshots in the area of University Parkway around 1 a.m. on October 12th. Once there, they discovered 21-year-old Ronnie Caldwell with several gunshot wounds. He was later pronounced dead by the parish coroner's office. But that same day, his roommate, 27-year-old John McIntosh, was arrested for possession of a gun in the presence of a dangerous or controlled dangerous substance. His arrest has not been linked to Caldwell's death. Just last week, one of Caldwell's former teammates was arrested in connection with his death. According to Northwestern State, Caldwell's death still remains under investigation. Yeah, absolutely. This kid is right. They cost a lot of jobs. It wasn't just athletes who, by the way, probably some were probably on the brink of maybe getting an NFL career or tryout or getting drafted. But look what else it does. Other staff, trainers, local businesses that benefit from game days. You know, I always talk about this with Iowa. In seasons where we don't play Michigan or Ohio State, where we don't play at least one of them in Iowa City, that's not necessarily, you know, some of the teams that travel well, Wisconsin, they don't stay in Iowa City. That's an over and back for most of them. Same with Minnesota, Northwestern, Nebraska. Any of them that would travel in a season like that, it's no good. They don't stay overnight. They don't stay to eat often. They might tailgate, but even then they're bringing their own stuff. So, yeah, it's not a good thing when they do that. It's not good for the businesses. What about advertisers who've advertised on radio? What about radio stations and television stations who have advertising tied up in that? What happens to any television contracts? Now, I know they're not in the Big Ten where they're getting a couple billion, but there is some type of media contract for these schools, even these schools. Yeah, who made the decision? Obviously, the players didn't. Continuing in the vein of poly sports, numerous women quit a jiu-jitsu tournament. Knowing me, you can guess why. It was covered on Outkick.com. Here are a few tidbits. They quit the tournament after being forced to fight men, prompting the association to change its rules. Female martial artists refused to participate in a tournament after men took over the women's category. In an interview with Redux, female athletes expressed a fear for their safety as male competitors have repeatedly infiltrated their sport. And it worked. The North American Grappling Association has officially changed its policy regarding transgender athletes. The Georgia Grappling Championship saw an all-male women's podium on October 21st. As trans-identified men Cordelia Gregory and Carissa Griffith took first and second place. Griffith won 4 total gold medals in women's events that day. The female athletes reportedly were not notified they would be matched up against males. Ducks Mag, multiple female athletes dropped out of a women's martial arts tournament last week after being matched up to fight trans-identified males. In one of the women's divisions, the only participants left competing were men. And this wasn't supposed to be happening anymore anyway. Naga had received widespread criticism in September after a female Brazilian jiu-jitsu athlete had not been informed she would be competing against a male. Taylor Moore posted a clip of her fight against James Alice McPike on her Instagram, noting that a 65-pound weight difference existed between the two competitors. Immediately following the backlash from that, NAGA clarified its policies on transgender inclusion. NAGA does not require biological women to compete against transgender women. Instead, we give the choice to the biological women, and if they decline, they compete in a division only with other biological women. According to the athletes, though, this policy was not upheld. The women had no choice. I honestly never thought this would actually happen in a contact sport, especially not my contact sport. Professional martial artist Jaden Alexander said, "When I saw him, I was so shocked I didn't know how to respond." Several spoke out, including OutKick's Riley Gaines. "In the name of inclusivity and feminism, males are brutally beating up on women and being rewarded for it," Gaines wrote. "Think about the message this sends." Donald Trump Jr. weighed in. He said, something I definitely didn't have on my bingo card a few years ago was Donald Trump Jr., male feminist. He posted on X, formerly known as Twitter. It's time to stand against this insanity. Where are all the soccer moms? Why have they allowed themselves to be bullied into silence? As we all know, they don't believe any of this. Here's the problem. Well, first of all, Martina Navratilova also weighed in. Said, so not just a couple athletes here and there. She was pointing out, because she was, remember, she was called on the carpet a couple of years ago, and they said, it's not that pervasive. Well, it is pervasive. During this tournament, it took place October 21st, there were more males participating than females in many of the women's divisions. So here's what they say. Division for cisgender females. We will have divisions for only cisgender females. Transgender females will not be entered into these divisions. Division options for transgender females. Transgender females must compete in the men's division. We hope that the simplicity of this revised policy will help to avoid any future occurrences where transgender females enter women's division. If NAGA staff is informed that a transgender female is in a women's division, they will be given the choice to go to the men's division or given a refund. Yeah. I mean, remember the whole Title IX fight that people went through, and I'm not saying I'm a huge proponent of Title IX because I think a lot of it is made up. I think it hurts a lot of men's sports. But good Lord. Well, Steve, you know, I have to keep talking about this, but Steve Dace said it best on July 31st of 2019, my 57th birthday. Here's what he said. It's a mental disease. It's a mental disease. He's absolutely right. It is a mental disease. Oh, T-Bone's having trouble logging in. Totem Alaskan and Duck are on. So Evelyn says there's some problems. Vito was, I guess, having a Monday. Like I said, some people are, and that's what Alaskan said. So when he was logging in to listen, he was getting just music playing. Don't know what that's about. So, yeah, I thought, you know, here's what I don't understand. Okay, so what's her name? What's its name? Megan Rapinoe, the former soccer person who blew the Women's World Cup chance, supposedly is leaving the country. We can only hope. But remember, she made the big deal that women needed to be paid the same as men in pro soccer. You remember why? Because it was only fair. It was only fair. And then she of all people, or it of all people, I still don't know, then made this big deal that transgender females, i.e. males, belonged in women's sports. Which literally obliterated her argument. That women should receive equal this and equal that. Because what she's saying is they really don't. They don't. You should deserve equal. It's just, you know what? It's kind of like that joke about Jeopardy when a trans woman won one of the tournaments. Somebody said, see, it really is men who are smarter. It is. It's a mental disease. It is a mental disease. Meanwhile, over on MSDNC, Rick Wilson, who is the founder of Intrepid Media, made the following comment. He's being interviewed about something. He says, and the donor class can't just sit back on the sidelines and say, oh, well, don't worry, this will all work itself out. they're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump. And that's a fact. Those were his exact words. I listened to the clip again today. I sat there slowly typing. I'm a slow typist, and I sat there slowly typing it out to you again. And the donor class can't just sit back on the sidelines and say, oh, well, don't worry, this will all work itself out. They're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump. And that's a fact. Can you imagine? I don't, you know, it's the same old stuff. I mean, this guy's a political strategist. He's a former member of the Republican Party. He lives in Tampa, as a matter of fact. I cannot believe, I mean, he literally got away with saying that on television. You imagine if any prominent conservative or semi-prominent conservative said that on a television show. Now, he's the founder of the Lincoln Project that worked to prevent the reelection of Trump in 2020. And he actually said this, put a bullet in Donald Trump. Not sure how he's going to get around that and say, oh, it was just a, you know, figure of speech or whatever. That's a threat. But, of course, he's not being investigated, I'm sure. I'm sure he's not being investigated. Let me look. Let me look. While we're sitting here, I'm going to Google it. Is Rick Wilson being investigated? Here's one other one. He said, if Donald Trump is not dead or in jail, he will run for president. Yeah, see, this guy, there's no investigation. There's no nothing. He literally said, they've got to put a bullet in Donald Trump. He didn't say metaphorically speaking or anything. He just said, put a bullet in Donald Trump. Meanwhile, across the pond, actually across the pond and over the channel, in Paris, among other places, we now have people, presumably terrorists or sympathizers, painting Jewish homes and businesses with a Star of David. Seriously, this is still happening in 2023. I mean, the question is, what are cities or states or other municipalities, as well as federal governments, going to do about this? I mean, are they really going to sit by, like many colleges and universities, and give lip service to tolerance and there's two sides and everyone should be safe? Garbage. We literally have people walking this planet who were alive during the Holocaust. I was alive. And I watched in disbelief when we saw the Munich massacre unfold. Every single one of us has seen the attacks on Israel over the years, the cheering scumbags on television after 9/11. And now the Hamas attack in Israel, where people are still putting up memes glorifying Hamas's attacks, complete with hostage taking, along with the more unsavory, oh, what the hell, the more savage goings on. And yet we still have people calling for an Israeli ceasefire. And we have students going after fellow students just because they're Jewish on American campuses. And now this? Good God. I mean, forget that these illiterate, savage, subhuman pieces of crap are merely identifying quote-unquote targets. But what the hell kind of quote-unquote peaceful religion, what kind of quote-unquote peaceful college students, what kind of quote-unquote peace-loving group kind are going to sit by and either allow or take part in this insanity? How in God's name are we going to let the news and media, et cetera, do the talking by just simply reporting this? Or in some cases, not reporting it at all. Where the hell is media outrage? Where in the hell is media outrage? I mean, here's how bad it's gotten. Seriously, this is how bad it has gotten. I'm going to play a little clip for you. You'll know it when you hear it. That's John Fetterman, of course. John Fetterman is being castigated by members of his own Democrat Party for siding with Israel. He's not calling for ceasefire. He's not calling for Israel to stand down. He is saying he supports Israel and that we must support Israel. That's our stance, and it must remain our stance. I mean, yes, we have members of his own party, i.e. the Squad, that are calling for Israel to stand down and aren't speaking out against the attacks. So that would explain part of it. I mean, seriously, people going around painting Stars of David. And I don't think it's unique. I don't think it's limited to Paris or to Europe. I'm pretty sure I saw something that it's happening here, but I just don't remember for sure where. And so I don't want to speak to it if I don't know the exact. Painting Stars of David on people's homes and businesses? And we're just brushing it off? We're just calling it an outrage and that's it? I mean, our government hunted down people after January 6th, looking at grainy video from people's cell phones or cameras in the Capitol building. Picking up photos of people through whatever, and chased them down, took them back to Washington, some of them put in jail. Meanwhile, we can't figure out who's doing this, can't put a stop to it. Welcome Joe Gibson to the chat room. Joe, host of his own show, Restoring Our Republic, also a candidate for North Carolina State House, District 65. He knocked off, a couple people knocked off of there because I think there are some issues with our internet stuff. I know Vito was having them too. The phone people seem to be able to stay on. Sue from New Mexico's on, my sister's on, a couple other numbers, but Hawkeye Mike's back on. But yeah, it sounds like we're having some problems with technical difficulties. Well, I'm going to take a break. First, I'm going to give you another internet laughy. Heaven Sent, X formerly known as Twitter. This is a good one. If you're in need of more followers, you might think about getting set up with Dominion software on your computer. I hear you can rack up 81 million followers with it. Okay, we're going to take a break. Let me quickly decide what I'm going to play. I'm not going to play the Halloween, Charlie Brown Halloween, because after all, Halloween has passed. Let's go with George Harrison. I've been watching a documentary on HBO Max called George Harrison, Living in a Material World. He did an album called Living in a Material World, and it featured some of his big hits, such as Give Me Love, Give Me Peace on Earth, but it also featured this one, Klaus Voormann, early Beatles devotee from Germany. Plays bass on this. We're going to play this. It's called Sue Me, Sue You Blues, and then we'll be back with some college football and my rant that I promised. Give it a listen. Yes. George Harrison with Sumi Suyu Blues, Klaus Voormann on bass. I believe Phil Spector produced that album, Living in a Material World, and helped produce All Things Must Pass as well. You know, it's funny, watching that, Paul McCartney talked about it. He said, you know, George was just peaking at the time that we broke up. You know, he was just coming into his own. You know, he'd already been writing several songs. He had a wealth of songs written that just didn't make it onto their albums. He was only getting one, you know, two songs per album or so. And you listen to All Things Must Pass, and then Living in a Material World. By the time 33 and a Third came around, I mean, he'd already done Dark Horse as well. Or no, I guess that was after. But I mean, literally, you know, after All Things Must Pass, he could have hung it up. Certainly could have hung one up after Living in a Material World. It's the same thing I talked about with Lennon and McCartney. I mean, the fact that those guys came along and did stuff after the Beatles is, in a sense, unbelievable. Because think about this. At the time the Beatles broke up, John Lennon was 30 years old. What did he have left to accomplish? Can you imagine at 30 years old? I mean, yeah, I'd imagine the creative spark ain't there in the same way, and you're collaborating with different people as well. You're not collaborating with, you know, your bandmates of, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever, well, you know, 10 plus years. So that they did anything at all as solo artists is, in a sense, remarkable, that they had to, that they still had the drive to do it, really. Anyway, love that song. George was certainly, my favorite of the solo work that was done, which doesn't, you know, I'm not knocking the others, but I really think his solo work was fantastic, very underrated. So we're back. This is Hank Jones. You're listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports. Number to call in if you want to listen, 319-527-6706. I understand there are issues with the internet. So some people are listening and having problems. Really sucks. Not fair. But they have these problems once in a while and they fix them and then something else happens. So, yeah. Number to call, 319-527-6706 if the chat's not working for you, if you're only able to listen online. Here's another internet laugh, the anti-commie on X, formerly known as Twitter. It's a meme. Does Hillary Clinton hang Halloween decorations or do they hang themselves? Some other sports news before I get to college sports. I was going to do it the other way around, but I won't get to it. The boxing heavyweight champ Tyson Fury, who is the WBC and lineal champ, actually had a ref go a couple weeks ago against an MMA fighter, who was a first-time boxer, Francis Ngannou, winning only a split decision. He was actually knocked down in round 7. He never knocked Ngannou off his feet. Fury's next fight is a heavyweight unification bout against Oleksandr Usyk, who holds the WBA, IBF, and WBO versions of the title. Both are undefeated. Fury actually has a tie on his record, but neither one has lost. Mark Davis, owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, fired GM Dave Ziegler and head coach Josh McDaniels. We couldn't be expecting an announcement on the token minority candidates by season's end. But in the meantime, linebackers coach Antonio Pierce is the interim head coach, while assistant GM Champ Kelly will serve as interim GM. Major League Baseball, the Texas Rangers are Major League Baseball's World Series champions. Yeehaw. I mean, I still follow the Cubs, but I don't care about Major League Baseball. I just don't after what's happened. NCAA men's basketball, the NIT is restructuring its postseason tournament selection process, mainly in response to a new tournament that is headed by Fox Sports that will feature the top 16 teams from the Big Ten, Big East, and Big 12 that do not make the NCAA tournament. The new NIT process will no longer guarantee a bid to regular season conference winners who don't win their league tournaments and are not selected for the NCAA tournament. This affects mostly mid-major conferences whose commissioners made the most noise about it. Seriously. I ask this. Sports media is actually covering the selection process for the NIT. Duke, to no one's surprise, has landed the top high school recruit in basketball. And in another non-shocker, Jacob Wilkins has committed to Georgia, which, of course, happens to be the alma mater of his father, former Bulldog Dominique Wilkins, also an NBA star. Hawkeye Hoops team beat North Dakota last night, 110-68. Prospects for this season aren't necessarily stellar. Caffrey is keeping up with the nepotism theme in Iowa sports. Fran Mack's youngest son, by the way, Jack, is supposedly better than either Patrick or the departed older brother Connor, but he announced a few months back that he will not be considering Iowa in his college choices. And supposedly, though he has another season after this one, Patrick McCaffrey is also moving on from Iowa City. That cannot make Fran McCaffrey's job very comfortable right now. I'm sure he doesn't really care. Elsewhere in Big Ten basketball, number 3 ranked Purdue, with reigning player of the year Zach Edey, cruised to a win in their opener over Samford. Number 4, MSU, Michigan State, went down to James Madison, 79-76. And Purdue's probably still smarting a bit from last spring's NCAA tournament, where they became just the second number 1 seed in the 64-plus team era to lose their opening round game. Hawkeye women also got a win over Fairleigh Dickinson. Their opponent from the NCAA title game last spring, number 1 ranked LSU, lost its season opener to Colorado 92-78. The real story there is the one that appeared on ESPN, says the officiating in that game was less than stellar. I'm not going to read the whole article, but it just says, if ref errors marked LSU women's title win versus Iowa, who's fined? They had planned a tournament review officiating, a review of tournament officiating after the 2024 championship concludes, but the process was speeded up by a year after criticism of the LSU-Iowa game. Officials were graded on their accuracy of their calls and that the overall accuracy number fell short. In the championship game itself, for example, we typically have a performance of 91% historically. In that game, the percentage of correct calls was below that, 88%. Funny part, out-of-bounds violations were not even included as part of the independent analysis. A foul on Angel Reese that should have been her second foul was not considered. Two offensive fouls were missed, one by each team. They are going to change one thing. Players will no longer be charged with a technical for a certain delay of game violations like the one given to Caitlin Clark late in the third quarter because she didn't pass the ball to an official after a foul was called. Since it was a second delay of game violation for Iowa, Clark was charged with a technical, her fourth foul of the game. So, yeah, I spoke to a retired official who lives in the Central Florida area about the Iowa fair catch thing, and he said, don't get me started. I said, what about all the people saying it was the correct call? He goes, number one, it was not the correct call, but number two, that was not the correct review. That is not reviewable. If it's not reviewable for a non-call, and it's not. It's only reviewable. Well, I don't remember exactly how he told me, but it was the way they did it. It was not reviewable. It was not called on the field. Play was not stopped. So yeah. Enough about that. Games in the past. So college football. Number 9 Oklahoma takes another loss. Lost to number 22 Oklahoma State in the final bedlam. Now that Oklahoma is joining the SEC, Oklahoma dropped 9 spots in the rankings, in the playoff rankings. Number 20 USC took a third loss to number 5 Washington. They promptly fired their defensive coordinator. Now they are unranked. Colorado and Coach Prime, remember how they were everyone's darling early on? Yeah, they now sit 4-5, 1-5 in conference. They need 2 wins in their last 3 games to get bowl eligibility. In their last 3 games, at home against number 21 Arizona, then they go to Washington State, Yeah, they go to Washington State, and then they go to Utah, who I think is number 14, something like that, maybe 18. But yeah, Coach Prime, and look, they've done better than they did last year. Not denying that. They only won one game last year. How much worse could it get? To Washington State, they go to Utah. Where is Utah currently ranked? I know I saw it. Maybe Utah's off this week. Probably are. Nope, Utah's number 18. I was right. Utah goes number to Washington this week, so they won't be 18 when they play Colorado. Number 19 UCLA took a 17-point loss to unranked Arizona. UCLA is now unranked. Arizona is now ranked. Arizona won three games in a row against ranked teams. In each of those, they went into the game unranked. They're finally ranked. Number 25, Air Force took a 20-point loss to unranked Army. Air Force is no longer ranked. Number 15, Notre Dame took a loss, their third loss, by the way, to Clemson. They're still ranked number 20. They only dropped five spots. As usual. James Madison is in their second year of FBS competition, Football Bowl Subdivision. It's a two-year probationary period because they moved up from FCS. They're undefeated, and the NCAA will not budge on their stance to disallow them a chance for a bowl game. And more on the NCAA later. This week, big games, number 18, Utah, at number 5, Washington, number 13, Tennessee, at number 14, Missouri. Number 9, Ole Miss, at number 2, Georgia. Florida goes to number 19, LSU. Miami, Florida goes to number 4, Florida State. And USC at number 6, Oregon. Second edition of the CFP rankings are out. Ohio State still number 1, Georgia still number 2, Michigan 3, Florida State 4, Washington 5, Oregon 6, Texas 7, Alabama 8, Ole Miss 9, and Penn State has moved up to the top 10 for the first time. Iowa, by the way, is in at number 22. Yeah, after that scintillating win over Northwestern at Wrigley Field. In the Big Ten, Michigan's situation is heating up. Staffer Connor Stallions has now resigned. He claims none of the coaches or staff knew about his sign-stealing operation or his going to other games. So it kind of slips out that it was an operation. His upcoming death will be either via car accident, suicide, or in the post-COVID era, the now ubiquitous cardiac event. Michigan is now saying that other teams were stealing and sharing their signs last season. Now, some places say it's possible head coach Jim Harbaugh could face suspension at the school as well as early as tomorrow. Elsewhere in the Big Ten, three of the Big Ten West teams that were tied for the division lead all lost last Saturday. Nebraska went down to 2-win Michigan State. Wisconsin lost to 2-win Indiana. And Minnesota lost to 3-win Illinois. This leaves the Iowa Hawkeyes in sole possession of first place in the Big Ten West division. Don't worry. The Hawks have three games left to blow that lead, probably in spectacular fashion, or possibly in spectacular fashion. Now, this week in the Big Ten, number 3, Michigan, at number 10, Penn State. I tell you, a whole lot of people are hoping for Penn State to win that. 3-6, Indiana goes to 4-5, Illinois. Illinois still fighting for bowl eligibility. 5-4, Maryland, at 5-4, Nebraska. Both with bowl eligibility in reach. Maryland is definitely trending down after a hot start. 5-4 Minnesota at 2-7 Purdue. Minnesota is not only still in the hunt for Big Ten or for bowl eligibility, they're still in the hunt for Big Ten West. Technically speaking, so is Nebraska. 4-5 Northwestern goes to 5-4 Wisconsin, both with bowl eligibility in reach, but probably not much else. Number 3 Michigan State goes to number 1 Ohio State. Let's face it, Michigan is not going to have the momentum that you would think they would have gotten from last Saturday's upset over Nebraska to the Hawkeyes. Limped to a 10-7 win over Northwestern at Wrigley Field. When I say limped, limped doesn't cover it. Really doesn't. Currently sitting at 7-2, alone atop the Big Ten West. But let's face it, the whole thing, like I said, it was not pretty. It was a scoreless tie at half. Several missed opportunities for the Hawkeyes, including a field goal that hit the upright, an interception thrown into the Northwestern end zone, a late pass from Deacon Hill to Ohio State portal transfer Caleb Brown. It was, by the way, Caleb Brown's first catch as a Hawkeye, led to a late 52-yard field goal by Drew Stevens. Big Deke went 10 of 15 for 65 yards with a TD and the aforementioned pick. The TD itself, it came after a block punt that gave Iowa the ball at Northwestern's 25. Northwestern's touchdown, first, they couldn't get it in four plays from the one-yard line. Hawks couldn't get out of the red zone, so they punted. Torrey Taylor hit his only bad punt of the day, really, which Northwestern returned into Hawkeye territory, gave them great field position. Sadly, it wasted that goal line stand by the Hawks, but Northwestern finally converted to tie the game. Jay Higgins was a machine again, getting 12 tackles, six of them solo. Also had two tackles for loss and a sack. Yeah, he's a butt-kiss. I think they're at the semifinalists now. Let me look. I don't think they're at the finalists yet. Yeah, they're still only on semifinalists. And Jay Higgins has been named a semifinalist. Gotta tell you, I called it before. That this guy, I called it at the beginning of the season. This guy's just watch him. I saw it last year, actually saw it two seasons in a row, where he was all over the place when he was on the field. Now, he wasn't getting on the field much because we had, at the time, Jack Campbell, who won the award last year, by the way. We had Seth Benson, Justin Jacobs at one point, who really, very talented. He took off, went to Oregon, but he was tampered with. Don't kid yourself. It was hard to get his name out there, but he was all over the field when he was seeing the field. As well, at the time, Iowa was going to some of the cash looks, the 4-2-5 and all that. But I could see it. I knew it. I said he was going to be a star this year. I was right. He is a star. No bones about it. He is good in coverage. Excellent against the run. He's like Jack Campbell. He has a nose for where the ball is going to be. Josie Jewell had it. I mean, whoever, Seth Wallace, I guess, is the linebackers coach, and Phil Parker is the D coordinator. Those guys are really coaching up the linebackers. Cooper DeJean was kind of stymied in the return game for the most part. He actually saw the offensive side of the ball, got a carry for 8 yards. The offensive line is banged up again, including center Logan Jones, as well as Bo Stevens, Rusty Faith, and Mason Richmond. This Saturday, the Hawks host Rutgers, the same Rutgers that actually had a 9-7 lead over Ohio State last Saturday at halftime. Rutgers is 6-3. Their only three losses were against Ohio State two at home to Michigan, at Wisconsin. They have some skilled guys on the offensive side of the ball. Their defense is among the NCAA leaders, along with the Hawkeyes. They're number 20 in scoring defense, number 11 in yards per game, number 6 against the pass, 34th against the run. I hate to say it, this literally could be a game of punting is winning. Punting is pretty much the only statistical category in which the Hawkeyes have a significantly better performance than Rutgers. Yeah, I'm going to go on a limb here and suggest if you're a better, take the under. It's at 28.5. We need three games to score 28.5 points lately. Literally. We need three games to score 28.5 points. Yeah, take the under. The Hawkeyes are favored by 1.5. Now, yeah, the game is in Iowa City. So we're favored by 1.5. You know, I've got to call it. Let's put it this way. If the Hawkeyes win, a one-point victory would almost be poetic justice just to, so they don't cover. Now, I'll go with the Hawkeyes right now, 13-10. That could change 10 minutes from now, 15 minutes from now. I'll go with the Hawkeyes, 13-10. If that means three field goals and two safeties, so be it. I just don't know any other way to look at this. I don't know how to, you know, I thought maybe after the announcement about Brian Ferentz that things would open up against Northwestern, that we'd see some different looks, might see some plays we hadn't seen in a while. I think it really boils down to this. One, we are banged up on the offensive side of the ball. We're down to our third tight end. You know, Luke Lachey and Eric all both out. We're on our second quarterback. I don't know what's going on with Joey Labus, other than I've seen that he is number two. No, it was number two, but Marco Lines is taking snaps as the number two now. Supposedly, Labus has said he's entering the portal. Some people say he didn't make the trip to Northwestern. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I didn't see. I don't see those. I know you can go look at those reports, but I have not gone to look and see them of whether he made the trip or not. I did see on several places that Marco is now getting the snaps with a number two. I mean, are they doing it because of the limitations of Deacon Hill? I don't know. Now, we keep hearing he can make all the throws. His accuracy has been bad. Now, last weekend, he did go 10 for 15, albeit for only 65 yards. Had the interception along with the touchdown. But, you know, I think they set him up for success a little more, maybe. I mean, I think only one person had more than one catch. I think Addison Ostrenga is the only person that had more than one catch. I could be wrong on that, though, because it wouldn't make sense. We wouldn't have put that many people out on the – we wouldn't have spread it over that many guys, I don't think. But, yeah, I mean, 10 of 15. And we didn't run on Northwestern that well. I mean, LaShawn Williams was our leading rusher with 79 yards, averaged 3-plus yards a carry. I mean, especially when you're having to run because you're passing, you know, your quarterback's out. Caleb Brown had one catch. It was a great catch. It was a great throw and catch, actually, and it put us in field goal position. Now, we didn't do anything after that to try and improve where we were. In other words, we shouldn't be attempting 52-yard field goals at that juncture. Too much can happen from that distance. What I mean by that is a block puts Northwestern in position. A missed field goal actually doesn't put him in a bad set. Addison Ostrenga had three catches. Deontay Vines had two. One for 1 yard and one for eight. And LaShawn Williams had two for -5. Yeah, we're throwing these screen passes that are literally glorified sacks. It's really mind-boggling. Now, supposedly, again, a lot of guys are down on the offensive line. that's the case, that's not good. And we already know our, you know, our tight end situation. But Rutgers can be explosive. Torrey Taylor only punted for an average of 39 yards last week. You want to know why a big reason for that? We were punting from Northwestern territory. You know, Hawkeye Mike notes, we need to be seeing more passes downfield. I'm not sure whether the offensive line can hold up. Now, they were pass blocking better earlier in the season. But again, I think they were healthier. But we were pass blocking better earlier in the season. Now, that could have been the fact that Cade was a little more mobile, not much more, but more mobile than Deacon Hill. I don't know what to make of, I mean, first of all, I wish they would come out and just say, Joey Labus isn't available. Joey Labus has left the team. I don't know if he has or hasn't. And that's the problem. I mean, maybe they don't want to put, you know, at this point, though, Marco Lines, we've got three regular season games left. Now, if you're worried about we need to keep him healthy for the Big Ten champion, I mean, no, he gets four. He can play in four games and still take a red shirt. I mean, we're not seeing Caleb Johnson in the backfield. Now, Kamari Moulton and Terrell Washington Jr., I think we were seeing them when Caleb Johnson and Jazz Patterson were down. Not seeing any Max White. We've seen him on returns. Do you really want to waste guys on returns? I'm not sure you do. It's just very, very puzzling. We're not seeing Seth Anderson much. We did see Caleb Brown. Like I said, that was good. We have a lot of freshmen that are supposedly looking good, but you know what? If we're not using them, it doesn't really matter, does it? And, you know, the other thing, I talk about the NCAA, you know, aside from the fact of what they're doing or not doing in the case of Michigan, this delay of Noah Shannon, I mean, it's supposed to be happening today. I haven't seen anything on it. I will look again later on after I'm done with this show. Noah Shannon bet on Iowa women's basketball. They're supposedly reviewing penalties, but come on. Why is this kid not being allowed to play? Kirk Ferentz is livid about it. He's absolutely right. You know, why is Iowa the only state where this has happened? As someone else said, if this were a kid playing for a blue blood school, it would have been investigated and put to bed. You know what? Like people say, the NCAA needs blown up. Sure. But, you know, Kirk Ferentz is saying he needs to be allowed. I just don't know. It's just, it's terrible. But that would make a huge difference on the offensive or defensive line depth. That's for sure. Make a huge difference. Twenty-nine days ago, he was cleared to practice and be listed on the roster again. Not yet cleared to play. 29 days ago, October 10th, said not sure exactly when the NCAA will clear him to play, but should be soon. As somebody else said, if athletes shouldn't gamble, then gambling organizations shouldn't be allowed to have commercials during broadcasts. They've allowed him to practice. Why can't he play? And one person says, the NCAA and Big Ten say they're all about protecting the integrity of the game. Really? Meanwhile, Michigan. Somebody here's a guy called Hawks by a Million. There's a bunch of those guys that walk around calling it. Just hypothetically, let's say we meet Michigan in the conference championship game. During that time, the NCAA still hasn't cleared Noah Shannon to play and hasn't handed out any punishment to Michigan. I say play him. They try to punish Iowa for it. You've just exposed how much of a bias there really is within the NCAA and Big Ten. Yeah, absolutely. Effective immediately. Reinstatement guidelines. Start up. So in other words, he's not coming back. Looks like. Approved modifications. It's just a joke. Just a joke. Says he's officially out of options and will not play this season. As somebody said, why'd they let him come back in practice? Why did they let him come back in practice? Unbelievable. This is what we've come to, folks. That's why I say politics and sports getting together isn't usually a good thing. It's not a good thing. And in this case, Noah Shannon is paying a price for admitting that he bet on women's basketball. They really need to – we need to just decide. Let's just go to other states and let's ask for – I don't know. I just don't get this. It affects Iowa wrestlers as well. It's just that. It's just, I don't get it. What the hell? I mean, what in the hell? Well, okay, so I'm depressed enough now with that news. This is my rant, our early Christmas. Halloween has passed, so on to Thanksgiving. Oh, wait, there's Christmas to celebrate, a mere 8 weeks early. I get that some retailers get the decoration stuff out on the shelves, especially the craft type stores. I mean, people do some elaborate decorating. Number one, you got your Christmas craft fairs, your bazaars, et cetera, coming up. People make Christmas themed clothing and decorations and stuff to sell, and knickknacks and other things to sell at those things. So I get that some stores have the stuff out early. Right now, go into any dollar store, at least here in Central Florida, and try to find Thanksgiving stuff. Grocery stores. Well, by the way, you can't even get those cute little Pilgrim salt and pepper shakers there anymore. Publix used to have these cool little man and woman salt and pepper shaker. They were little Pilgrims. Cool as hell. We still have them in our house. I don't know where they are, but we still have them. Can't get those anymore. Turn on your TV. Go to the section of your guide, whatever you have, where you find Hallmark or Lifetime or other assorted channels and apps. Find a Thanksgiving movie. You won't. You will find a crap ton of Christmas movies. None of them good, by the way. Now, admittedly, you can find Planes, Trains, and Automobiles as well as Scent of a Woman on some of the apps for free. But you pretty much have to pay for anything else, like Plymouth Adventure. Love that movie, 1952. And for God's sake, people, please don't indulge the psychos who have put horror movies that take place around Thanksgiving. I mean, that's just weird. Who's doing Thanksgiving movies that are turning them into horror movies? What the hell? I mean, what the hell? Thanksgiving is horror movies? That is just, the last straw for me is radio. And not so much terrestrial radio, but Sirius XM, where just today, They added three, maybe four Christmas music channels on November 8th. Now, look, I get that there aren't a ton of Thanksgiving songs, at least in terms of popular music. I mean, seriously, though, do we really need Christmas music now? Now, look, I talked about this back in 2020 and 2021. Remember the Christmas push, I said, was put forth the idea that we had to be in a hurry. Disputing the 2020 election was wrong. We needed to speed things along. I think that was part of it. One way to do that, of course, like I said, push Christmas music just after Halloween. Here, it literally the day after the election in 2020, they were doing the Christmas music. Yeah, in 2020, it started the day after Election Day, just as it did this year, at least on SiriusXM. I don't know if it has on terrestrial. I don't listen to terrestrial radio anymore. I don't see the point. Another way, of course, though, was the idea that family gatherings should be limited, maybe even not allowed at all. Why? Certainly not for safety. Most of the government types that were pushing it were already gathering at their swanky bars and wineries without masks to partake in food and drink that most of us will never see or ingest. And no gatherings would also be a way to keep people from talking about a disputed election or a corrupt government or a corrupt medical establishment and or foment any of those things. Notice how COVID's making a comeback again? Of course, we always have mass shootings to throw things off. Still, all that aside, does anybody remember when Santa and Rudolph and the Grinch and even the damn Elf on the Shelf could wait until the Friday after Thanksgiving? By the way, even that we call Black Friday now. It got progressively earlier over the years. I get that. But 9/11 at least changed that for a year or two. I mean, we actually observed Thanksgiving. We actually talked about fall sports. We celebrated fall foliage. I remember we were grateful for a country where even with our differences, we could rally in times of tragedy. Sure. I know Big Left couldn't abide that. They couldn't. Unity, after all, is the very antithesis of being anti-American. Unity really could, in their twisted skulls, lead to increased popularity back then for then-President George W. Bush. Now, remember, they had to call any American retaliatory strikes anti-Muslim. Remember that? Notice any similarities between then and now? Like just last week when Vice President Kamala Harris was bragging on how the administration has come up with declarations and proposed legislation to eliminate the Islamophobia that is, unbeknownst to any logical American, running rampant through our country? Literally, after all that's happened in Israel and what's happened on college campuses, and they come up with a thing about Islamophobia. Here we are via our media hoisting Christmas on everyone the second Halloween is over. Thanksgiving be damned. Okay, enough on that already. Get off my lawn. I know, I sound like an old coot, but final Internet Laffy for the day comes from Babylon B. Hamas pointed that liberals don't believe they killed Jews. After all, after they went to all the trouble to live stream it. It is funny, but it's not funny. It's like Ralphie Wickham says, it's funny, but it's not funny. So there we are. That's it for today, folks. I want to thank Boyd the Alaskan at Duck Northwest Media. Ron Reck was in here for a bit. Joseph Gibson. I know there are issues with the internet stuff. Indy Hawk was trying to be here earlier. Couldn't stay in. Several that came in and just couldn't stay in. The problems, it was going to music. Indy Hawk said it was just playing music over and over. I want to thank Sue from New Mexico, my big sister, Hawkeye Mike, T. Bodie, A couple other numbers I don't recognize, but I've seen them here before, I think, but I don't really recognize them. But I thank them all for listening via the phone. You know, we got Thanksgiving coming up. Don't be worried about Christmas just yet. So be thankful. Be grateful. I know things seem like they're going to crap and feel like it's been that way for the last 3 years now. I get that. I feel that too. You know, the elections yesterday didn't go too well. I haven't even looked at all the results because there was really nothing in Florida that had counted at all to us, to me. I mean, I guess Orlando mayor, but who cares? Buddy Dyer is going to hold on to that as long as he wants. But I guess in Virginia we had stuff. Wisconsin or Kentucky, Beshear held on. Ohio, I guess, and Virginia had gains by the left. You know, with the poll results coming, you know, some people have pointed out though, down ballot. It's sort of like the Trump phenomenon. Down ballot in Kentucky, everything went GOP way, but somehow for governor, it just doesn't. You know. But the Republicans didn't do well in the elections yesterday, evidently. You know, it is disconcerting. But take heart. I mean, I think there's still hope right now. And I'm just getting this. U.S. launches airstrikes to retaliate for attacks on bases in Iraq and Syria. It says anti-Semitism exposed. So the U.S. is not going to sit pat and let that happen. But in the meantime, the GOP did flip a New York seat that Dems held for a long time. So who knows? Hamas terror leaders are living in the lap of luxury away from Gaza. I mean, all this we're seeing. We still got a lot to be thankful for. At least for now, we live in a country where we are still, for the most part, free to do what we want. We live in a country where you can still kind of speak out. It's getting less so, but for now, you still have that freedom. So take heart. We do have that. We have a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, we still have a standard of living pretty much better than most anywhere else for the average citizen. So take heart. In the meantime, folks, be safe the rest of this week. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy your weekend. College football's getting interesting. If you're a Pac-12 fan, there's still a lot to play for out there, although Washington has the upper hand right now. The Big Ten, it's a three-horse race, pretty much a two- or three-horse race in the East Division, which means for the championship, because the Big Ten West winner is not going to win the Big Ten championship game. Big 12 is still – Texas is still leading that now. There were several teams tied, but Texas, I believe, is leading it again, maybe along with Kansas. So there's some good stuff going on in college football. Basketball is just getting started, which means Caitlin Clark. She's all that's really worth watching right now, I think. So, yeah, it's getting good. It is getting good. Hawkeyes, like I said, I don't know what to make of this weekend. I'm calling it 13-10 just because I could never call for a Hawkeye loss. But I will not be shocked if we lose. I just won't be shocked. I'm sorry. I can't be. But, hey, be safe. Have fun. It's beautiful weather in a lot of the country. Not beautiful everywhere, but, you know, if you're in the southeast or just in the southern states, it's still pretty nice. It's getting to be a nice time to get outside, do yard work, tailgate, whatever. If you're in the northern states and it's cold, it's an even better time to tailgate. Like I said, you got to have your tailgating shoes on, so to speak. have your go-to drinks, et cetera, et cetera. But in the meantime, it's that time of year. It's getting good. But as we get closer to the holidays, let's be mindful that we still have a lot to be thankful for. And pray for our country. We need it. We definitely need it. It's going to be a battle. It's not one we should give up, but it's not going to be something that comes easy. I wish it was. Wish it would be easy, but it's not. It wasn't easy for those that formed this country either, by the way. So we got that going for us, which is nice, as they say. Okay, I'm trying to think of something good to send you out with. I know what I'm going to say. We're going to send you out with sports music. Absolutely. Here we go. This is Gathering Crowds. Have a good one, folks. God bless.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.